Hey there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, November 24th, 2010, the day before Thanksgiving, don't you know? And you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That's me.
Will you marry me?
I guess so, since you put it so nicely. So Brody James is back with us today. He's here again this week for part two of our conversation about his sex education. That is, his personal journey into the world of kink and alternative lifestyles. But wait, you didn't miss part one of this delightful conversation that appeared here last week at this time, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site. All you gotta do is use the site's search function. Type in podcast number 246 and presto! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search.
That's why I don't smoke anymore. Dope makes me stupid.
Yeah, proposing marriage to me is kinda stupid. But anyhow, Brody invites all you members of FetLife to look for him there. You can find him by searching for his profile, BJK32.
So what are you going to do now?
Now, I'm going to tell you about today's sponsors. Today's program is brought to you by DrDickSexAdvice.com and DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans. Our sponsor today is me. You'll have to excuse this shameless self-promotion, but I wanted to call attention to a standing invitation for each of you to support and underwrite these marvelous shows. I could really use your help. You know, I was listening to my local NPR station the other day, and they were gearing up for one of their pledge drives, and I thought to myself, hey, I ought to do that. I'm exceptionally proud of the quality shows I've been bringing to you, my international audience. And over the last 3 years, I've presented a variety of extraordinarily informative, enriching, and entertaining programming. Interesting interviews, enlightening Q&A, and some very fun product reviews. I mean, where else can you find this kind of quality, diverse, sex-positive programming? And it always comes to you absolutely free. Okay, so right about now, you're probably asking yourself, hey, Dr. Dick, how can I help support and underwrite this effort? Well, I'll tell you. You just mosey on over to either of my sites, DrDickSexAdvice.com or DrDickSexToyReviews.com, and look for the donate button. It's a blue heart-shaped icon. Click on it and make your contribution. Any amount will do, but those folks donating $50 or more will receive a swell thank you gift, excellent personal lube, smutty porn DVDs, wonderful sex toys, or some delicious erotica. Be the first one on your block to join me in bringing the world this fun, informative, and enlightening information. Think of it as a holiday gift for your favorite sex podcaster.
Are you going to stay here?
Yeah, I sure am, because you know what? It's time to get on with the show. Brody James, thank you for joining me again here at DrDickSexAdvice.com for a continuation of our conversation for the Sex Education Podcast series. I had such a good time with you last week, and you're such a joy, and so well-spoken. I'm glad that we're having this second round, and I'd like to pick up precisely where we left off last week. We were talking about being a dom and being submissive and being a top and being a bottom, and I thought what you had to say about those things was so interesting, so I want to just push through that a little bit. I'd like to ask something that I've asked other guests in this series. Is there a different kind of high associated with each role, dom and sub and top and bottom?
Yeah, I mean, I would say very much, first of all, thank you for having me back this second week, but you know, obviously I think I mentioned last week that I don't necessarily get into sort of any sort of subspace or
right,
high
right.
when I'm on the bottom or receiving end.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously I play with people that very much fall into that.
Yes.
And, you know, you could have something as small as a passive rope along their chest
right.
and, you know, it turns them on right away.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they fall into a high almost immediately.
Yeah.
From a dominant point of view, you know, I've had situations where, you know, you get so into the scene or so into the play that, you know, you're incredibly focused on what's going on. And you know, I almost look at it, you know, it's kind of a combination of between a permagrin and a devious little smile at the same time.
I love it. So many power players speak in terms of BDSM being both recreational and cathartic. Do you happen to agree with that? And if so, would you like to elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much recreational. And depending on the individual, I think it can be very cathartic as well. Especially, I think the main thing reason that it can be so cathartic is because, you know, you're, especially in a DS situation or control situation, you're giving up complete control to another individual. And you're not, whether it's for, you know, 24 hours or whether it's for half an hour,
right.
To them that release is can be very, very cathartic to them. And so I think that it is very cathartic. And obviously it can be recreational because if you're in a casual play situation, you know, it's fun. Both people are turned on. Otherwise they wouldn't be doing it.
Right.
And they're just enjoying themselves being in the moment.
And, you know, like I was mentioning last week, you know, that Sam and Buffy helped me over my fear of needles with some needle play. And now, you know, like I went for a flu shot just recently, and, you know, I can tell you that, I had a silly smile on my face because I no longer made the connection in my mind between, you know, pain or discomfort or ill at ease, and it was almost like a joking kind of thing. I pictured, you know, Sam and Buffy right there, you know, wielding needles and whatnot. So it was joyful. It made all the difference in the world.
And look at that. Now, you know, it's you're growing as a person.
And at my seriously advanced age, can you imagine? So, many DS relationships have a significant role-playing aspect to them, daddy, boy, mistress, slave, whatever. Is that part of your play?
You know what, I don't do a lot of role-playing, to be honest with you. Whether it's a DS, daddy, boy, mistress, slave, it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, I for whatever reason, I just, you know, I don't really define things in that sort of
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it takes a little bit of suspension of disbelief, and I'm
I know.
And to me, I've always had a problem with a little bit of suspension of disbelief. I'm too real and too
uh-huh.
exactly where I am at the
uh-huh.
moment, so I mean, I've never done even something along the lines of like, oh, you're my mate, you're my French maid, and you know, walk around in a little maid's outfit, and you know, I'm gonna come home, and you're cleaning the wrong way. Oh, I'm gonna punish you.
I never can do either. I mean, I know people who absolutely live for it, you know, and can slip into character at a moment's notice, and I think it's absolutely marvelous. But honest to God, I can't. You know, I meet guys online all the time, and they're just, oh, you could be my daddy, and I said, oh, for about 15 minutes, I could sustain that, but you know, otherwise, then it gets like too silly, and I can't pull it off. So, when people wanting to get into the life contact me for advice, I always suggest that they connect with an established dominant or submissive for some tutelage. I suspect that since you are relatively new to the scene, that you have sought this out, sought your own mentors. And last week you talked about your forays at the Center for Sex Positive Culture. Is that how you found your mentors?
Yeah, and you know, I don't really like to think of it as mentors because
okay,
I think
cool.
mentors is a very I think mentors is a very, very formal thing.
Okay.
Like, you know, if you want a mentor, you're gonna say, will you mentor me?
Mm-hmm.
And I prefer to think of it as people that are willing to be there to be open for you to ask them for advice and willing to provide guidance.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, I've been lucky enough to meet some people in Seattle that have been willing to provide me set advice and guidance. Yeah. And really, it's, you know, people that I've seen, one, like I'd mentioned Max before, and he's been a great individual that I've been able, that he's been open to answer a question or two of mine, you know, listen to some things that I've gone through and be able to provide some advice. And, you know, while it's not a formal, I can't call it a formal mentor type thing, but he's been open enough to, you know, offer me some assistance, and that's been, you know, incredibly helpful. And I think that the best way to do it is, and I mean, how I came across him was go to a couple of classes. I saw how he operated, and you know, I said, you know what, I think that he's a great kind of role model for people in the community.
Yeah. And so role model, you would use role model as opposed to mentor.
Yes, very much. Yeah. And actually, one of the best pieces of advice that he offered to me was, you know what, I can. You know, share with you my experiences, but you know, that's only one person's experience. You have to go and, you know, go to workshops, go to conferences, mm-hmm. and learn from other people, because everyone's going to have their own style and their own method of doing things. Yeah. And something I may do might not jive with you,
right. But
you may like, you know, three or four aspects of things I do and three or four aspects of something else, and you're going to develop your own persona.
Right. And I'm the kind of guy who learns best by hands-on kind of stuff. I mean, I can read a book and, you know, I can listen to a lecture, but give me an opportunity to do the thing that I'm supposed to be learning. I'm so better at learning that in that situation than the other. Is that the same?
I'm much more of a hands-on person as well, but I find that, you know, you need, in order to do hands-on, you need to see somebody do it, obviously, it's also important in my mind to have some sort of theory behind what you're doing. I'm not going to read a book and purport to be an expert on something, but I'm going to read a book so that I know the background of what's going on, so that when I go and do something hands-on, I can take what I've read and not so much put it into practice, but at least I understand it better.
Right. Can you tell us something about the particular scenes that you are into?
Obviously, I mean, some scenes that are more quite along the DS side. I've mentioned rope along the side, along the thing. So, you know, from a control aspect, and you know, there's both physical and mental control. So
yes.
Both of those get integrated into most of the scenes that I do at some level. And it's, you know, it's, for me, it's a lot of fun, and obviously the people that I play with seem to enjoy it as well.
So we talked about this briefly, last week, and, here's where I would like to go in a little bit more deeply. And that is, I want to talk about power play and sex, and most everyone that I've talked to insist there is no necessary connection between the two things, that you can have power play be part of sex play, but you can also enjoy the one without the other. Is that your perception too?
I guess in a way, but I think it really depends on how you define sex.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you define sex as the physical interaction between two people, whether that's, you know, actually, you know, body contact,
uh-huh.
if that's how you define sex, and I'm not talking just penetration here,
right,
I'm talking
any sort
of aspect of sex. But, I mean, sex can be very mental as well, and
right.
if you equate power play to turning you on and mental stimuli in that sort of respect, mm-hmm. I think that power play is a big part of sex when there's no physical interaction.
Right. That's a great distinction, and thank you for making that.
Like I said, it's really all in kind of, I mentioned this yet last week, but it's all kind of in the eye of the beholder. And
mm-hmm.
the way I view sex is, I don't view sex as just, you know, the physical interaction between two
right.
people. I view sex as, you know, sex can be sex talk. Sex
yeah.
can be, you know, control of somebody,
right.
You know, while you're across the country. I mean, that
right.
can definitely be involved sex as well. And
yeah.
if there's a sexual aspect to it, it's not necessarily sex per se, the literal definition, but there's a sexual aspect to it.
Yeah, like Alfred Kinsey said, the biggest sex organ in our body is between our ears. So I totally agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. But the reason that I asked you that question was I want to ask you the following, and that is, do you play both with women and men? And I'm assuming, and I don't know too much about you other than, you know, what you've told me in this discussion and when we first met in August, but I'm going to guess that you're primarily heterosexual. And so, and if I'm wrong on that, please correct me, but so do you play with both men and women, and how do you negotiate the, you know, the sex play aspect if there is one?
Yes, I am, you know, primarily a heterosexual individual. I can't say that I've ever had any sort of bisexual tendencies, but I don't, I would play with both men or women. Because, you know, well, like I said, there's, you know, I'm not, I wouldn't necessarily have the literal definition of sex with a man at this point in my life. But I don't close anything off. And the fact that you can play with somebody, you know, it doesn't have to be about a gender thing. It can be about a connection thing.
So cool.
You know, your next question was, you know, I don't play with, you know, everyone that approaches me. You know, I've talked to some people who, you know, they're, you know, for the better sense of a word, they're, you know, top sluts or bottom sluts, and they'll play with everyone that approaches them. because a large aspect of what I the play I like is a you know, a control type thing. You know, there has to be some sort of connection there at some level, and you know, I have to be able to engage them and kind of get a feel for the type of person they are. And you know, I've had people come and say, hey, you know, you want to, you know, suspend me at the next party, and I've kind of said, well, you know, I'd rather talk to you a little bit and get to know you a little bit better before I just say, hey, I met you here, and let's throw you in a rack. And, there's something to be said for the fact that that's fun, but at the same point, I think that, you know, for me personally, I like to have a little bit more involvement with the people that I play with.
Yeah. But the reason that I ask this is that I've talked to a number of people both in this series and, you know, like privately, and they have preferences, you know, like I'd prefer to play with a woman, you know, I'd prefer to, you know, do my bondage on a female body as opposed to a male body, but I'm not opposed to the concept of working on a male body, or the obverse. And it's interesting, you know, because a lot of this, like bondage, happens. It involves nudity, because it's prettier. It just seems to me. and you know, there's sometimes there's sexual tension, and sometimes not. And there, it's interesting to me that, you know, there are some folks who wouldn't go to, using rope on a man because that wasn't his thing, because he's not gay. But I said, you know, that has nothing to do with gay or straight. I might be wrong in that respect, but, you know, that was my thought. But
no, and I'd agree with that. I mean, I don't, you know, if you're playing with someone, it you know, it can have a sexual, obviously, component to it. But like I said, that sexual component doesn't necessarily have to be physical.
Right. And just because somebody is aroused doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do anything with it, you know.
Of course not.
And the object of suspension bondage on someone, I mean, the object is not necessarily to fuck that person. Is that
no,
correct?
No. Good. You know, you actually have to suspend someone in very specific ways to be able to do that.
It's so true. So, I often hear from people who are intimidated by what they think, or they think they know about BDSM and power play, but they are afraid of being a rank amateur and not having a clue about the correct vocabulary or subculture etiquette. They don't know where to start. And a lot of these folks know for certain that they have a dom or a sub streak that they would like to investigate, but who and how should they approach someone for help? Do you have any words of wisdom in this regard?
Well, I mean, in terms of people that don't know, you know, they're not sure about the correct vocabulary or subculture etiquette. Back to what I mentioned earlier, is, you know, research. I mean, you know, and that's one of the best ways to understand the verbiage that people are going to use in the community is if you're reading a book about, you know, DS, or if you're reading a book about flogging, you know, you're going to have at least a understanding of the words that are going to get used.
Right.
And so, I mean, that gives you confidence in when you go and approach somebody and you see somebody do a fantastic scene and you say, hey, you know, I really liked what you did there. How did you do that? I mean, to be honest, there's a lot of, you know, we all have a little bit of an ego. And if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, I really liked what you do there, you want to talk to me about it? Chances are they're going to talk to you about it. And
that's so true.
So I think, you know, that's the best way to go about it. You know, get a basic understanding through reading or you know,
online searches. You know, you can do online searches for a lot of stuff, and it'll give you the basics, basically.
Right. Hey, Google helped me find the center.
Exactly that. So I also understand that you identify yourself as polyamorous. You kind of alluded to that last week. So let's talk about that a bit. Can you tell us more about the kind of polyamory you enjoy? I think you refer to it as solo poly, which sounds a lot like a little lost doggy to me, but that's probably not what you're talking about, I don't think.
No, it's actually funny. I only recently came across the term solo poly. It was at Folsom Street, the Fringe, where the workshops were. I took a class called Solo Poly by Alina Gabosh, who runs the center in Seattle.
Yes, right.
And it was her version of poly. And, you know, she said that she'd only kind of, in the last little while, kind of come up with the definition. So it was a very new workshop that she had run.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that she defined it was very much where I am in my life at this moment. And it's the fact that you don't have a primary partner and you're not living with a partner and you're not looking for a primary partner. You're just, you know, you're enjoying relationships that you have and you're enjoying, you know, the play that you have.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a lot of people in the world that say, I'm looking for somebody to spend the rest of my life with.
Yes.
And
at
this point in my life,
relationship poly. Basically, yes.
Yes, that you know that would be called. You know, I would say relationship poly is a little bit more. If you're in a poly, if you're in a relationship, and then you decide to be poly, but I think it's a bit. You know, I look at it as a very very fluid type thing. And at this moment in my life, I look at it. I'm not looking for a life partner. I'm looking for somebody that I'm going to enjoy spending time with at this moment in time.
Right.
And I don't necessarily feel that, you know, I need to have a life partner to define who I am.
Right.
And obviously, I mentioned before or last week that I came into the poly world in a relationship. And so in that sense, you know, we were a primary partner and that was kind of the dynamic we had. And we lived together and we had outside partners and that's how we kind of identified as you know, I would just say, yeah, we were kind of relationship poly or we were in an open relationship is it's kind of more of a layman's term that people use these days.
Mm-hmm. And do you suppose that your poly identification is associated with your fetish and kink identification? They are one and the same thing or they follow one another?
Yes and no. I mean, like I said, I think that there's always going to be an aspect of, you know, if I was in a primary partner relationship, one thing that I'm pretty sure that I know I would probably need is even if I didn't have a physical sexual relationships with somebody, I'd still want to be able to play with multiple people because that's fun. But
yes.
I don't throw out, you know, while I identify now as polyamorous, I don't throw off the table that at some point in my life I could be monogamous with somebody because I don't think that you can see what's going to happen, and you know, I don't know who I'm going to meet 5 years down the road, and I don't know how they're going to make me feel. And
right.
I think you have to be able to be open to all kind of aspects of that.
Yeah.
And but in terms of associated with my fetish and kink identification, I'm pretty sure that I would probably continue to have to be able to play with somebody.
Right. Huh. That's interesting. Many people who are living in a monogamous relationship or sexually exclusive relationships, polyamory seems to multiply the difficulties, they think. Is that true? like in terms of jealousy and whatnot?
You know, I'm a big believer in communication, and you know, I don't think you can be in any sort of relationship if you don't have good communication, and obviously you can't be in a polyamorous relationship if you don't have good communication.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that I speak with, and they say, you know what, I can imagine myself having sex with somebody else, but I can't imagine my partner having sex with somebody else, and because I'm jealous, and you know, my answer to that is, you know, well, okay, why are you jealous? You know, take it one step further. Are you jealous because you're afraid of something? You know, if you're, you know, don't just live with the high level emotion. You know, you wanna work into it, and
right.
don't react too quickly. Try and figure out exactly why you're feeling that. And if you're in a relationship and you live with someone and, you know, you guys love each other, chances are they're not going to leave you for a roll in the sack.
Right. Probably.
Right? It's not a lot, you know, a lot of people don't really, you know, drill it down that far. They just say, oh, I'm jealous.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Well, that's not, thanks for identifying that for me. Yes. You know, because that's so true. I mean, so what are you going to do with what you have just discovered is happening inside of you? Are you going to do anything with it? Are you going to explore it? Are you going to try to dissipate it? Are you going to try to understand it? Don't just drop a bomb. That doesn't work, at least not from my point of view.
I you know, most of the times that I see it happen, it doesn't work. It doesn't end well.
Yes. So how do you interact with individuals who you date or see that aren't into kink or poly? Do you find women or men saying, God, you're hot and I'd jump your bones in a minute, but you're a freak with all this multiple relationships and bondage BDSM stuff?
Well, it's interesting because in Vancouver, I date primarily people that aren't into the kink scene. I find them in the vanilla world, quote unquote. And it, you know, it makes for difficult sometimes, but at the same time, I'm comfortable with who I am, and I'm open and honest with them. And, you know, it might not be the first date, but it'll probably be the second or third date where I'll say, hey, I'm into some kinky stuff, and I do some classes in rope bondage, and I've been to Folsom Street Fringe, and I'm polyamorous. And if you can't handle that, well, I enjoy your company. Well, then this is who I am.
Yeah, right.
And
that's
so,
wonderful.
Yeah,
because inevitably you're going to have to come out at some point, right?
And that's true. And you know, I say, you know, kind of, it's hard to do it on the first time you date somebody, because
right.
a lot of times you know, you don't actually know if it's, you know, you could go out on a date with somebody and like, okay, well, that didn't work at all.
And it wasn't about being kinky or poly.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's probably not going to work even if I am kinky or poly.
I love it. Do your friends and family know that you're a big fat pervert?
They do, actually. I don't have an issue with them telling people who I am. My dad knows I go down to Seattle to do rope classes, and my sister knows, and everyone knows that cares to know.
Yeah, I just heard a police siren, so they're probably coming to collect you.
Yeah, no, that's I have a firehouse right near my place here, so.
There you go.
there's some. I have some dates that come over, and they prefer to sit out at the window at the firemen.
There you go. So who are your sexual heroes? Do you have any?
You know what? I don't know if I really have any sexual heroes.
Okay.
I just asked that question
just in case somebody does.
Yeah, no, there's people obviously that I look up to and I think are good role models, and I've mentioned some of them before, but in terms of sexual heroes that I would kind of classify as such, people like that have turned their lives into what they love to do. I mean, one of the best examples of that is Monk, and you know, his love of rope he's turned it into a business.
Yeah.
And you know, that's at some point I thought, you know, hey, is there something that I could do at some point in my life that would revolve around kink and something that I really be doing? And there could be, and I have an idea or two, but it's a matter of whether or not that actually comes to fruition or not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think something like that would lend to being able to be called someone, some sort of sexual hero, because they've done what, you know, they're open, they're out, and they're doing what they love.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you know what? I have every intention of, you know, chatting you up again for one of these podcasts in a couple years, because I think you are on the cusp of some pretty remarkable things. I had a sense about this when I first met you in August. I thought, what a remarkable man. And I think, you know, even since August, there has been, you know, this flowering of you, and I only can imagine what's, you know, the future can hold. So terrific. And I want to thank you so much for spending so much time with us, because it's been really wonderful, and I'm glad that you weren't intimidated in thinking that you had to know all the answers. I liked hearing just exactly what you had to say from your own perspective.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Dick, for having me on. It's been a great experience, and I have no idea what will happen within the next 2 years, but I'd very much like to come back if the opportunity presents itself.
Good. And just as we conclude, then, would again tell us where we can find you on the net, if indeed you want to be found by any of us.
Again, I'm on FetLife, and my handle on FetLife is BJK32.
BJK32.
Feel free to find me, track me down, send me a message, and ask me a question. I'm open to providing anything that I can provide.
Thank you very much, sir. And until we speak again, we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
Sounds good to me. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
What a wonderful show. Brody is such a joy. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next time for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Sex Advice and Dr. Dick's Sex Toy Reviews. You may be asking yourself, hey, why should I make a donation? Well, I'll tell you. Infrastructure and administration costs for a free site like this are astronomical. So if you like what you see and hear, if you enjoy all the wonderful features of DrDickSexAdvice.com and DrDickSexToyReviews.com, then I invite you to make a modest one-time donation online. We suggest a donation between $20 and $50, but any amount will be gladly accepted.
Right, I know, but I'm telling you, I think I've got something good right here. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's about everything. Suicide, despair, where did our hope go? Lost hope, that's it, lost hope.
I don't know, that sounds a little boring. I like sex stuff better.
Yeah, well, you think everything's boring. You know, I mean, you wouldn't say that if it was the Lost Hope Diet.
Oh, snap. So this donation I'm talking about is a one-time sort of thing. There's no automatic credit card renewals or processing fees, and you can be certain that every dime that you donate will go to support this valuable sex-positive effort. Finally, your donation underscores your social conscience. Your sponsorship helps disseminate badly needed sex education and sexual enrichment messages throughout the entire world. Look for the donate button featuring the blue heart icon on the front page of either DrDickSexAdvice.com or DrDickSexToyReviews.com. I thank you in advance for your generosity. And until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.